Monday, June 1, 2020, Dakota County Board of Commissioners meeting at 1:00 p.m.
We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Martin?
Yep.
Tony is absent. Kevin?
Yes.
Larry?
Here.
Janet?
Here.
I'll make a motion to excuse Tony.
I'd second that.
Kevin?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Martin?
Yep.
Janet?
Yes.
Our current copy of the Opens Meeting Act is posted on the west wall near the entrance of the county boardroom meeting room. It's available for review by all citizens in attendance. We'll go ahead and start with our tabled item. Our tabled item is the wind energy situation that we're looking at, the moratorium. We have not had adequate time to, or the ability to get out to do some of the things we want to, so I'd make a motion, or if we need to make a motion, or just recommend that we go ahead and table it for our next meeting.
Just recommend. You don't need a motion unless you're talking about it.
All right, so this would be the time for public comment. If there's anybody here that wants to make public comment on anything that's not on the agenda today, now would be the time to come forward if anybody has any comments on anything that's not on our agenda. All right. Consent agenda items. Those would be the approval from the previous minutes from May 18th, 2020, and approval of accounts payable. There were just a couple of accounts payable. I went through those earlier this morning, and everything appears to be in order.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda, the minutes, as well as accounts payable.
Second that.
Larry?
Yes.
Martin?
Yep.
Janet?
Yes.
Kevin?
Yes.
And then the approval of payroll claims from May 17th through May 30th, 2020. Again, I had come in this morning and went through payroll claims. Everything seemed to be in order. There's still a number of people that are working with the health department. I think they are starting to cut back a little bit as time goes on. I think there was one person that is not going to work any further. They terminated and they did not need them. People didn't need that help at this time. And so going forward, that will continue to happen, but everything appeared to be in order.
Make a motion to approve the payroll claims, item number A in new business for the period of May 17th to the 30th.
I'd second that.
Janet?
Yes.
Martin?
Yep.
Kevin?
Abstain.
Larry?
Yes.
Board to approve the interlocal cooperative agreement and resolution 20C-008 between the counties of Dakota and Dixon for the repair of the Pope Bridge number C00220011 located on the county line in section 10, township 27N, range 6E in Dakota County. So that's the repairs on the county line bridge that we've had issues with for some time now.
What was the cost of those repairs, our portion?
It's half.
The contract was 100, I think it was 182, I'm just trying to pull it up, 182,000 that we split 50-50, or 162,000. Let's see if I can find it on my email. Yeah, the contract was actually with...
I was trying to find a I have it in my budget, too.
Yeah, it was in the, there was a whole schedule in the contract.
Oh. Kent has it. Page 15? Okay. There's a little chart with...
And it shows the total, $162 or $182 that we're splitting.
Local match is $282,912.
Oh, $282. Okay. That's for it, so...
$142-ish.
My one question is, and Kim, maybe you can answer this. I noticed that the LPA is defined as Dixon County. We're not even mentioned in this. Does that give us any liability if anything doesn't go right? Or, I mean, I'm happy that we just have to pay a little tiny bit of this whole project, but just because it's written the way it is.
And Dixon County is the one signing off on everything also. If you look on the top of that, right before that.
Right here, right before that?
Yep.
Right here.
So they're the ones responsible. We're just putting in money.
So we're helping them cover the 20%?
Because it's on the county.
Yeah.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's their project.
So this agreement, all this is their responsibility to make sure it happens?
Yep.
Okay.
They split the road, I think, this way, and they get this part and they...
Yeah. We're just not taking the lead in it. We have the, we would have the northbound and they'd have the southbound.
That was my only question, is because it's to them, we have no, if something goes awry, this is...
No, we're even, if you look above the signatures, we're allowing them to sign for everything. It's their responsibility.
So what would happen if there's a $100,000 cost overrun?
We would share it.
Do they pay it, being their names on there?
No, it's a joint project and we're paying half of, you know, the county's responsibility, so... I mean, that would be my guess, that would be my understanding.
Most likely, in this case, yeah.
I mean, it does say in here that they will cover, somewhere in there, it said 80%. You probably read through it, Kim, more closely than me, but...
But if a guy could get out of every bridge with $150,000, you'd sure feel pretty fortunate, but...
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
A lot of people.
All right.
But their distance.
There you go.
So yeah, local match, we'd just be half of the local match.
Yep.
Okay, half of the local match. I can make a motion that we will be, take part in the inter-local cooperative agreement, wherein we take, we will be half of the local match per the...
Resolution?
Per the whatever it is.
Yep, resolution 20C-008.
I can second that.
Martin?
Yep.
Kevin?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
All right, we go to miscellaneous. Fred Kellogg, the Highway Superintendent Road Report. Fred's not with us today. I think everybody has a copy of that report. The one thing that kind of sticks out is there was 77 hours worth of overtime. Monday was a holiday, so then the guys didn't work, so they went ahead and worked their Friday. Good conditions because of the rain to work the road, so they came in and did that. And I would say this weekend, my time out in the county, the roads are in really good shape. The things that everything I was on, anyway.
I got one call about, and I didn't get a chance to get out there to drive it, that 200th Street may need some gravel, but I can just talk to...
Is that where you had talked about earlier, Larry? Where they had pulled the shoulders up?
Very complimentary on the crown, but he said a little gravel.
Yeah, Dennis Rainer.
Okay.
Rainer.
Yeah.
It's been going, for about 2 years, it's been pretty skimpy on rock. And it's getting to the point now where it should have some rock.
Mm-hmm. And I know they pulled up some shoulders, Larry was saying. But then with the rain, they had some issues, so they were out there.
Out west on Oakdale or something, but, I mean, they got that fixed, or it was yesterday, or Saturday, I guess I was out there.
Okay.
But this down on 200, see, there's been a lot of more traffic there because of the golf course business also. Because they're coming off 77, they're going straight west and then hitting the bluff.
Yep.
So it's increased the travel there.
Yep, I can see that. All right, looks like the only road concern was Oakdale Road, 180th Street, so, again, been a pretty mellow spring for the roads, so we deserved that after last year.
Last year we got a flood, this year we got a pandemic.
Yeah, I know. I would just like nothing.
On the road report, see, the Oakdale Road was addressed, but it was Oakdale and 180th.
Okay.
So I was taking care of last Friday, Thursday, and Friday.
Okay, perfect.
Well, I started hauling rock to it on Wednesday, but they had it finished up, I think, by Thursday night.
Larry, do you want to take care of touching base with Fred on the rock to make sure that we leave Ronnie what he needs left to him?
Somebody can, somebody should.
Yeah.
I mean, what I think's going to happen, Ron's going to say, no, I can't have no more, then what do we do? Do we go to West Point, Rock, or do we go to LG Everest, or who do we go to then? I don't think Higman will have the material.
No, I doubt it.
Without having to request and make it the same way as Howard over at Gretchenville. They won't have any until you request it and take them couple months to do it and make it.
Okay, we'll why don't you touch base with Fred on that, and then we'll just go from there. All right, Jacob, Lieutenant requesting chair to sign a grant, COVAS, emergency supplemental funding for law enforcement expenditures in the amount of $368,000. $368,858. Jacob.
Corey, how are you doing?
Good.
You need me to say my name for the record, or are we good?
We got your name.
Okay, perfect. I been kind of working with Joan. She helped me out with this a little bit. I don't know if you guys have read into this much or anything, but the federal government had opened up some funding for local agencies to acquire equipment, supplies, anything we might need to mitigate right now and prepare for any response plan our local law enforcement may need in response to this coronavirus pandemic that's currently going on. The grant instructs us to prepare through January 2022. So we are requesting various items. You guys all have a printout of what we asked for. There is going to be one addition to that, Marty. We wanted to write in for some AED machines. As you know, or if you read up on this, one of the side effects of this virus that's going around is cardiac arrest when the inflammation gets up around the heart. So they wanted to write in for some AED so we could be prepared to help people any way that they would need it.
Is that changing the final number then?
Yes, it's going to. I've got the quote right here, and it's literally going to be as simple as me adding onto a line item and just changing the number. And then the only other addition that's going to need to be made here is there's a forms chart that I'll need to put the dates on when this gets signed, and then it can be submitted. So
does it need to be submitted by the first of end of the month? Or?
This is actually a rolling grant. They review them as they come in. The expiration date is January of 2022. So but it's something that, you know, I've seen other agencies have already jumped on and been awarded these grants.
I know that South Sioux had put in for a grant. Were they awarded a grant?
Yes, they were.
Were they awarded everything that they asked for?
Yes, they were, to my understanding. And that was a large sum of money, pretty close to what we're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys get a chance to read through that, I think I went through and justified everything that we're asking for. I don't know what your thoughts on that are. If you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them for you guys.
What kind of training would be required for things like this thermal body temperature scanner and these AED machines?
So the AED machines, those are actually covered in our CPR course, which are required biannually. The thermal body scanner, the number you see in there was a quote from the company, and that includes the training comes with it on site. So those are already included in the final number.
What happens if you don't use it for what you state is going to happen? What if we don't have...
In reading through there, there was a section in there that I seen, Joan, on how to remit money back to the state that are unused funds.
Okay.
I'd have to read through it again to find the exact section of it, but if you need, I can sure find it and submit it to you guys as part of this if you'd like to see that.
I just wondered if there was an audit of any type.
There is going to, I mean, obviously we're going to have to track the spending. I don't know if the checks get cut over here and we're going to track that here, or if we'll track that over at the sheriff's office. But yeah, I mean, obviously we're going to have to track where this money's going and what it's being spent for.
I would imagine that at the end of the year it'll be audited, just like the health department, additional money there. So, I mean, if we do get it going forward, make sure that it is really well documented on
where it goes. Everything I got on here, I know they're rounded amounts, but those are fairly concrete numbers for what we need. The only thing that was a guesstimation was the overtime costs. And obviously, I don't know right now how much overtime through the next 18, 20, 24 months we're going to spend. So, and conferring with Chief Deputy Decker, that's the number he felt comfortable with. And it breaks down the hours in there. And, you know, Joan's very helpful with breaking down the amount we're going to need for the fringe benefits, such as, you know, the FICA, the retirement, all that, to cover any additional costs that we're going to need in response to this.
What is the timeline? That's one thing I couldn't figure out as I was looking at this.
The what, Janet?
The timeline. Like, when does it, like, this is due, this grant is due when, and these activities happen?
It's due January of 2022. It's a rolling grant, so they will review them as they come in. You know, our concern is being too late on the ball here and not getting what we ask for and things we believe that we need to respond to anything.
And then you have till next January to do this stuff and report back?
Yep. Yeah, that's my understanding of how it read.
Of 2022?
Yeah.
Oh, 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. That's how long they want us to plan out for, to prepare for.
To execute your plan.
Yep.
And, you know, unfortunately, none of us really know where this pandemic's heading and, you know, what's going on, if it's getting better, getting worse. All we can do is take what the experts tell us and roll with that. So, you know, based on what we know right now, I believe everything I put in there is pretty fair. So the only question is I can add this stuff in. I was going to do it this afternoon, and I couldn't get logged onto the internet, so I apologize. I was on the phone with RTI for about 40 minutes before I came over here trying to get it fixed. But if you'd like me to add the final numbers in and then me submit the pages for signature, I can do that.
Why don't you go ahead and get it all put together to where it's ready to go, and then we'll sign off on it.
Okay, do you need to sign it at a meeting, or?
I think it just needs the chair and yours, right, Joan?
Yep.
I'll just stop in. As soon as you get it done, I'll just stop by whatever day it is and sign off on it. It gets approved.
Okay, yeah. I think I've got your number, so when I'm able to get it done, I'll let Joan know, or I'll shoot you a text or something, and we'll get done.
Yeah.
You guys have any other questions for me?
I also heard that we need to be open by June 6th to qualify for this. I'm not sure.
I haven't read that anywhere. I'm not aware of that. I'll definitely look and do some digging, but...
that's what Lance told me today.
Lance probably knows more about it than I do.
But so that would be pretty important for us to know if, you know...
Sure where he just said that, but he didn't back it up like, this is where I haven't seen that anywhere.
Yeah, I didn't see that anywhere in the paperwork.
And as I read the government's, or the governor's guidelines, I don't think that there's any way that we can be open now and meet his guidelines. So it's kind of, just to make sure that we're kind of not in a situation where we can't go either direction.
Yeah.
We need to just flush that out.
Absolutely. So, all right, if you guys do have any additional questions, I'm always available, email, phone, whatever you guys need, let me know.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Approve Resolution 20C-.
Do we need a motion?
Oh, yeah. I think we probably should.
Well, I'll make a motion to approve the chair to sign the grant application.
I'll second it.
Which one are we on? Are we on B or C?
B.
Okay.
Kevin?
Yes.
Larry?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
Martin?
Yep. All right, we'll drop the C. Approve Resolution 20C-009 for participation in the Papio, Missouri NRD Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan.
Deanna Hagberg forwarded this to me. We're required to do this every 3 years. I found one that we had approved in 2016. She goes, nope, you have to do this again. So.
Okay. So it's just a
for
thing that we have to do.
Stuff
yeah.
Like that. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion to continue to participate in the hazard mitigation plan.
I'll second that.
Larry?
Yes.
Janet?
Yes.
Martin?
Yep.
Kevin?
Yes.
It's board to discuss and approve extending the COVID-19 precaution deadline to keep the courthouse locked and the business done by appointment only. So I guess that's the discussion that we need to try to figure out what we want to do going forward now being in the situation that we're in, being one of four counties that are behind the rest of the state and being released from different guidelines. We need to decide, but if it, I know that we had received an email from Larry Dix, and it mentioned that in order for us to be eligible for, you know, some of the stuff at the state level, the courthouse needs to be open for business by the 15th. You know, and I don't know if that includes us because, you know, we're behind the rest of the state on those plans, so I guess that's something that we would need to clarify. If we have to be open by the 15th, we meet on the 15th, so it'd be kind of hard to wait till the 15th to say, hey, we're open today at our 1 o'clock meeting. So short of an emergency meeting, I mean, maybe that's what it'll just fall to, that if we have to have a short emergency meeting prior to that. I know next Monday, we're meeting with all of the department heads with regard to budget. We've also asked to meet with our health department, emergency management heads to go forward with what the reopening should look like and what they require and what we should do. I know that across the state, as some of the courthouses have opened, they have had different issues with a lot of people showing up for different things, you know, things that haven't been getting done for a lot of months. And then also people coming from other counties to get driver's licenses and things like that. So they're just having a lot of, maybe being last will be not so bad. So a lot of those things might be done some other places. But so I guess, what are you thinking?
Being we were the hot spot in Dakota County, wouldn't that have a bearing factor?
I would think so, because the health directive that the governor put out, that they said through the end of the month, there's a possibility they might revise that as of the 15th, but as of right now, you know, there, you know, very little can be open in Dakota County. There can't be any gatherings of over 10 people, and I don't think anybody can say that if we open our courthouse door, there's going to be less than 10 people in here. So I don't think there's any way we'd be able to meet the guidelines put forth by the governor's office if we opened the courthouse at this time. So I think we need to get clarification from them. I agree, Larry. I don't think until we know that, you know, everything is dependent on us being open by the 15th, I don't, you know, because my recommendation would be to just stay closed for another 2 weeks. But if that falls on the 15th and we need to be open because of what they say, then maybe we should.
We're having a meeting. You're having a meeting with
her. Well, you and I are, and Joan, with as part of that, we'll be here all day with the budget stuff. And we're going to, one of the open slots, they agreed to come talk to us over the reopening.
But we have to post an emergency meeting.
Well, we won't have to for that, because we'll be meeting.
Okay.
With regards, and we'll be meeting them independently also.
I mean, I think it'd be nice to shoot for this, whether it's practical or not. I guess we need the expertise of our local healthcare and what have you. It'd be nice to shoot for that.
So we could go ahead and set it for the 15th with the option to revise it?
You'd have to have some stipulations, though. I mean, I think, people have to have masks, they have to get their temperatures. I mean, you've got to have some stipulations.
But then we also have to have manpower to make sure stipulations happen.
Mm-hmm.
And figure out where that manpower is coming from.
I mean, like, you can, like, Menards, you know, they have one entrance.
Mm-hmm.
They were checking for masks, and they weren't...
And I think, and it does say in the reading that I did that we can set a limit that, okay, there can be 25 people in the courthouse. Mm-hmm. So whoever, if we do have somebody that's working the door, do you think that that's not the case?
I'm just going to throw out there, on June 10th, there's county court, and there will be way more than 10 people here because everything's been backed up.
Forever.
So probably going to be in there most of the day.
Yeah.
There's a lot, but... So I don't know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And how do you do it? Try to figure out excluding county court, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do they wait in their cars until their judge tells their cases, you know? You're hearing this person's next, so then you let this person come up, and then when that person goes out,
That's what they've been doing. I'm not sure with that amount of people what he'll do.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have to open June 10th. They've been running all along.
Yeah, they just would have people wait in the car one at a time if they're in the jail. Would do some WebEx, too.
And without further clarification, I guess the way I read it, I mean, this is right from NACO, is that if we want to receive this funding, we will be open by June 15th.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
that's
not by
the way
appointment.
I read it, too, and not by appointment.
I guess my recommendation would be to set it for opening on the 15th, and if we get clarification in contradiction to this, then we just have a special meeting and, you know, continue it from there. So my recommendation would be just to follow this recommendation and actually have it open.
Because I have a feeling...
Maybe with some stipulations.
I have a feeling that the governor's office, if things go decent for the next 2 weeks here, I think they're going to go ahead and kick... I think they'll kick us at the 15th, but that's just a gut feeling.
What do they do out in the Grand Island area? Where they have
They've already let them go. I mean, they're back into the same...
Madison, too?
What are the other three counties...
Hall? Is that Hall?
No, I don't think Hall was included in the latest one.
I guess I don't know which.
I don't.
I can't remember. Imagine they had a lot of problems early on, but.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all those governance releases, there's three counties that they always say that you're under phase one. And
I know. I know. And I just read that again, too. And
I think NACO said too, it's unrestricted, as I think Kevin McDee said, no appointments required.
Yep, it's, yeah. That's,
so
it's not.
So you wouldn't even need staff. That means no testing at the door, no.
It doesn't.
Nothing. That just means a free for all.
Well, it doesn't. I didn't see where it says anywhere that we can't put stipulations such as.
The thing that I read said that we can stipulate how many people come into the courthouse. The door just has to be open.
Still can't do that?
Yeah.
Because I haven't gotten a response yet. I've gotten responses from three senators now who all backed my email and said that they're going to approach the governor with what he thinks he's doing. So they're of the mindset that he is going to switch it for Hall, Dakota, and Douglas.
Switch it.
That he will give us a separate date. So, and I know they've been meeting with him about it.
Okay.
So I would look, hopefully they do that. Otherwise, I'm not changing. I'm not letting anybody in. I don't care what the NACO says. I don't care what anybody says. We're locked down. I got a pregnant lady in there, and we got people dying every day over in the hospitals. I'm not letting a soul in my office.
But if they come to your window, will they get served?
They come up to my counter. But that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Other than that, and they will be doing appointments. I'm not going to have 87 people. It's protest season. If we would have had everybody show up today that called, we'd have had 100 people in this office, in that hallway.
But that's your normal protocol, isn't it, to have appointments for protests? That's your normal protocol?
It's always been, they want us to make sure we talk to them.
Initially, they call back in and set up a time for an appointment for...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. But the initial contact with their office is normally a nice call.
And they're already mad that they have to call. We've been seeing that, it's been...
It's hard, people are getting frustrated, it's been a long time.
Oh, they're very rude on the phone right now. Like I said, I'm an ex-sailor, I can swear with the best of them, but I don't belong in the county, so I can't keep up. They're doing it pretty good. I mean, paragraphs is good. So I'd be all worried about the 15th.
Yeah.
Just in my office, because like I said, with the staff we have and some of the limitations, Governor can do whatever he wants to. It doesn't have a thing to do with me. But I don't want to do anything that hurts anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, like, because that CARES funding, for example, if this CESF fund is part of that CARES Act federal money, if we don't do what NACO says, then it doesn't matter.
Then they're not eligible to anything.
We're not going to get it.
Yeah.
Unless we adhere, which is... Kevin's got the right idea, just say, yeah, we'll open on the 15th for now, and hope he changes his mind.
And if they don't, I think we're stuck with it.
Well, we're still under the 10-person rule.
Yeah, we're still
June
under
30th.
This here says we're on the 10-person rule to the 30th. When you read that, I mean the...
For Dakota.
Yeah.
Yeah, it puts us...
What shocked me when he opened up our DMV, out of 93 counties, he couldn't have picked a better county than Dakota to open up the DMV.
They've always been open by appointment only.
Well, that's not, no, this is all part of his unrestricted opening.
On the 15th.
So I don't know. When the courthouse has been open, I told him that too. We've never closed. We've always been open by appointment.
Yeah.
But apparently somebody cried because of the appointment part is what I'm assuming. Because he went out of his way twice. I watch him every day. He does his press. He's going to start doing them twice, three times a week. Listen to him. He pointed that out specifically. He had to backtrack to tell us that that's just, we don't need to be doing that.
The appointment part of it?
Yeah. So I've invited him to Dakota County on the 15th. And he was told him to pay for his gas, pay for his lunch. Some of the senators are replying.
Maybe that'll be reimbursed through the CARES Act. Yeah, I think with this, they've kind of tied our hands if we want to get reimbursement. And we're obviously, we've spent some money here. I mean, we've definitely spent some money. It'd be nice to get that reimbursed and not put all of that just on the taxpayers, at least of our county.
I think we better try to honor it to the best of our ability.
Yeah. Well,
all right.
I guess
you're really ready to make a motion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we reopen the courthouse beginning on January 15th. June 15th.
I'll second that.
Janet?
Yes.
Martin?
Yep.
Kevin?
Yes.
Larry.
And then just, if we get some further guidance.
Yeah, if we get some further guidance before next Monday, we'll get to...
We can do a special meeting.
Yeah, a special meeting and adjust us accordingly.
And if we can add some criteria, guidance.
We need to add some criteria, and we have the ability to do that.
They'll still have to follow the directed.
Social distancing and all those things,
But then,
is that something we need to discuss here in the meeting, or is that something that we can... Perfect.
Should the press release state that there will be...
We need to tell the public what we want them to do, though.
Yeah.
Right. Show up at the door. But
I think
we
probably should issue press release.
Or do you just tell them you're following the directed health measure and attach it?
It's too much to read.
That is. I mean, they
so the press release will be closed through the 14th and open on the 15th,
yep.
And guidelines will be come.
Following.
Yeah, guidelines.
Details to follow.
Yeah, or something like that. Okay.
Open pursuant to the directed health measures.
Okay.
Guidelines. Do we maybe have a stockpile of masks to give people?
We don't even have PPE at S Corner, so.
Where?
We ordered it long ago, and we have no PPE.
Yeah, your office?
Go through the health department.
You do?
We ordered it.
You did?
Because they have all kinds of it. They have more of it than you could use. They have more, they have enough to, for the entire county to use.
They had a military truck out here loading big bundles of, what the heck was that?
They got, yeah, there's.
Boxes or something?
Yeah, they.
So we haven't been able to go to any.
Yeah, they gave, I know one of the local businesses just got like 22,000 of them.
To be able to go into a positive house?
No.
No.
That's what we were.
Oh, you're at the hazmat for like a corner call deal?
Well, that's what we need, which I ordered.
Haven't done.
But we would just be talking masks for people coming in that door. Simple ones.
Yep.
And it looks like they, it seems like everyone does that anyway, as they're coming in. At least all the ones I see.
Nope, one that doesn't.
Lot of them.
Could sell them for a dollar like you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
I asked them if I could return it when I was gone. I asked them if I could return the product I don't want. They said no.
You could, but you could, they're a dollar at the door, but you get in the line, they're 88 cents.
Oh, Menards? Yeah, that's it.
Plus 11% rebate.
Is the rebate on this week?
Yep.
Is it really?
It's been on for about the last 2 months, and I think they'll probably continue it on through this, just to, yep, it's on now. All right, so do we need to continue anything, any more specifics on that motion, or we'll just go with what we have, the directive health measures, and then we'll, because I know that we're going to have to have some signage and some other things explaining how we want people to do things. So when we get together with the health director in it, well, and I told them both, I ran into them this morning when I got here, and I said, when we meet with you, I'd like you to have the information together, what we need to do for reopening.
X's on the floor and mask. And
whatever needs, yes.
Some of that stuff. Okay, good idea.
All right.
Is there a motion or no?
There was.
We built, yep.
Okay.
Then?
Kevin, Janet, Michael.
Okay. Can't remember.
All right. Doug Nelson to share information and data regarding wind energy. He's nice enough to come over and give us some information on wind energy. He does have 30 minutes, so if you guys are welcome to stay, you're welcome to do whatever you want to do.
Very good. Thank you. I'm Doug Nelson. I'm from Wayne. 10 years ago, I was seriously contemplating starting a wind project of my own. I'm also a farmer. I'm a pilot. And I'm friends with Mr. Wagner there. And he was featured on the front page of the Wayne Herald about 3 years ago. Randy addressed the commissioners at the Wayne County Board as to property values relating to wind turbines.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to kick this off here. He's got about three items to talk to you about.
Okay.
And then I'm going to take over. So come on up, Randy. And you need the board?
No.
Okay, but I will. I'm going to need the chalkboard, so if anybody that wants to see what I got, you can move your chair right here so you can see.
Hello.
Hey, Randy.
I'm Randy Wagner. I live west of Wayne, about 15 miles, and I'm a retired farmer. And my wife and I, our intentions were to sell our acreage off of our farm and move into Norfolk or Yankton, Omaha, wherever grandkids are at, we're going to go. But then in 2016, I had somebody from a wind turbine company approach me about putting a turbine on my property. And that was the first thing I'd heard about any of the turbine development in Wayne County. And when it's done, our acreage now will be in the middle of about a 300 turbine to 350 turbine development in Wayne County. So back when I was thinking about possibly putting one on my property, I wanted to do some investigating about any negative consequences from the towers. So I just started researching, and there was a lot of information on the internet, but the article that I found most reputable was in Forbes magazine. That's a very well-known financial publication. It's about 100 years old, published all over the world, very reliable information. And there's an author in there, Jude Clemente. He writes some energy articles for Forbes about property value loss. And he quoted a McCann and Associates, they're an appraisal firm out of Chicago, that have done property value studies on 28 separate turbine developments throughout the United States. And they found property loss on homes and acreages of 25% to 40%. Loss in value from the turbine itself to 2 miles from the turbine. So I took that as fairly reputable information. The second thing that was quoted in that article was the London School of Economics, one of the best business schools in the world, had done a 6-year study in England about turbine development in England. And they found losses similar to that the first 2 miles, but their studies went out all the way to 6 miles and were finding losses 3-4% 6 miles. Now, I don't know if that would happen here. I don't think it would, but I know that. So the second thing I decided to do after I had that data, I want to go and talk to people that live in wind turbine developments. So I was going to go up to Bloomfield and talk to all those people up there because that project's been going 10 years. But I decided there were too many towers, too many people. So being a farmer, I knew if I called the manager of the co-op, I could get some good information. So I called the co-op in Bloomfield, and I talked to the manager. He said after 10 years of Bloomfield, the people that put them on their property to live around them hate them. The people normally that live around them that didn't put them on their property hate them. The only people that like them are the absentee landowners. So now that was the first information I got from someone who lived around them. So then I decided to go on the ground because there's 7 of them east of Humphrey. You can see them on Highway 81 when you go south of Norfolk. East of Humphrey, you can see them about 2 miles east of Highway 81. There's 7 of them there. So I went in there and started driving around and talking to people who lived around them. And then a couple of guys told me, you need to talk, if you want to talk about acreage value dropping, talk to the guy on the end of the project. There's 7 turbines. He has a small business on his acreage. So I went and talked to him. And he has a processing plant, like a locker plant, on his acreage. And he processes beef and pork for the farmers in the Humphrey area. And deer during the deer season. He has a beautiful 2-story log home, and I've been in it. And part of it is 2 stories, and the other half of it is open 2 stories with a stone fireplace in one end, beautiful home. And he's 65, and he said that they had told people in their church at Humphrey that they were gonna sell this acreage, so there were 3 young couples that were very interested in this acreage, wanted it bad, and I can see why. Once the turbines were up, all 3 couples no longer wanted the acreage. That's what happens. That's reality, I found out. So at that point, I decided I could not put one on my property knowing that it could devalue my neighbor's house. It's just wrong. So that was when we decided, and I went to the Wayne County Commissioners that Doug was talking about and told pretty much what I told you all here today. And since then, Doug and I have been involved trying to stop wind energy in Nebraska and speaking at different meetings and things. And one of the things that I found out since then, now I'm moving on to the weakness of wind turbines and solar systems. It's called intermittent power. In other words, wind only produces electricity, wind power, when the turbines are turning. The same with solar power, the only time it produces electricity is when the sun is shining on the panels. So the way the companies have set it up, they have natural gas backup plants that kick in when the wind turbine systems aren't working or the sun isn't shining. And that's what they're doing. Omaha Public Power District, LAS and Lincoln, and Nebraska Public Power are all shooting for 50% green by 2030. Now, this is what happened. There were three major blackouts in the world in the last year and a half. The first one was in Minnesota about last winter in January 28th. I don't know if you remember that. Not this January, but the year before, about a year and a half ago, that polar vortex where we're so cold here. Well, the last 2 days of January and the first 8 days of February, there was no wind blowing because it was a high pressure system in Minnesota. So the winds were shut down. And the natural gas plants kicked in to create electricity to meet the needs for the state. At the same time, 68% of the home furnaces are natural gas. So the pipeline system in the state couldn't meet the needs of the natural gas that was needed by the power plants and the furnaces in the home, so they started having blackouts all over the state. They were moving people from areas where there was electricity into areas where they're into motels where there was electricity. That happened all over the state of Minnesota. Now, you never saw that on any national news. You would see it in Minnesota television stations and that kind of thing. The head of Xcel Energy, the largest energy company in Minnesota, went on TV and told the people in Minnesota to turn your thermostats down to 60, to take cold showers and wash with cold water until this crisis is over. The same time that happened in Minnesota and right next door in Michigan, they didn't have the blackouts, but the head of the power company in that state told in the Lansing area, they shut down over 200,000 automobile jobs because there wasn't enough electricity in the state to meet the needs of the factories. That was the same time Minnesota and Michigan happened. That's example number one. Number two is in Texas during last summer. They had a heat spell down there. Another situation, high pressure system, no wind, 104 to 108 degree temperatures. They normally produce electricity down there, 125% of capacity. The 25% overcapacity gets sold into the grid. And because it was so hot, the wind wasn't blowing, it got down to 103%. They were getting really nervous in Texas, and they couldn't get enough electricity bought off of the grid to meet the needs of the state. And if it would have dropped under 100% of what they would need, let's say get down to 99% production of the 100% they needed, they would start having blackouts there. With those kind of extreme temperatures, they would have had a tremendous loss of life of older people, all of a sudden no air conditioning and 106, 108 degrees in their homes. The last one I'm talking about happened in London in October of this last year. They had an offshore wind turbine system that wasn't producing any electricity. The natural gas plant that normally kicks in, and it always does, usually, except this day, that produces electricity into England's electrical grid to cover the wind turbine system that wasn't working. They couldn't get the natural gas plant started. So a major blackout lasted 2.5 hours right during rush hour. By 4 o'clock in the afternoon, London is a city of 11.5 million people, 1.5 million people a day ride the train system in London. When this happened at 4, it lasted from 4 till 6:30, there were tens of thousands of people on trains underneath the city streets of London with no light, complete darkness. The only lights that they had were from their cell phones. And people were scared to get off the cars because electricity that drives the trains comes down street rails underneath the cars, and you didn't want to get out and walk down to the next station with electricity come back on. It'd be too dangerous. So that went on for 2.5 hours. And after that, London itself, the city, you know, is a mixture of Tories and Labour, conservative and liberal political thinking people. And the green energy movement is pretty much backed by the political left and a few people on the right. Well, that happened to everybody in London. They all went through this and they were all upset with it. So the political parties from both sides in England had a lot of pressure put on them. And now they're moving forward with this project in Northern England, a nuclear fission project being built by Rolls-Royce. There are 5 small mini reactors being built up there so that London has a more consistent source of electricity that the state could depend, or the country could depend upon. And what I'm afraid what's gonna happen, you know, the same politically thinking and business people that have got us to the point where 80% of the antibiotics that were needed for this country are produced in China are the same people, the politically thinking and business people that are leading us down this green energy path. And we're going to have a inconsistent source of electricity in Nebraska down the road that could be bring problems of bringing new manufacturing into the state and that kind of thing because we don't have a consistent source of electricity. And the third thing I want to talk about is nuclear fission. When I was a college student, my first summer during freshman sophomore year. I had a summer job in Lincoln. I worked with a kid that was a, that summer, that was a student at MIT in Boston. I had no idea what MIT was at that day, but Massachusetts Institute of Technology, one of the greatest engineering schools in the world. And I got their magazine. It's called Technology Today. It comes out 6 times a year. I got it for decades. So I was familiar with the nuclear fusion technology research that they've been doing at MIT. And they came out last year and they said they're about 10 years away from solving it. And that fuel is water, H2O. And there's no nuclear waste from it. It has to do with fusion of hydrogen atoms. And, but, you know, it's coming in the future and it'll be here. And so I've read, and if MIT says they're 10 years away, they're 10 years away. I mean, that's close. But in October of this year, it surprised everyone. The United States Navy filed a patent for a mini nuclear fusion reactor. So they have it. The United States government has it. And like the one at MIT would be like half the size of this room, maybe 25 feet in diameter. The other fusion reactor that they have in Europe that there's like 7 or 8 countries doing research on, that one would be about 4 times larger. But the one that the Navy put the patent on is a mini. It's like 2 feet in diameter and 6 or 8 feet long. It could be used in aircraft, ships. And I feel if the Navy filed a patent, they have it. They have the technology developed and have it. So I think we have this new clean energy, real clean energy coming just a few years down the road. But we have a group of politicians and lobbyists and business people pushing the power, the people who run the power companies in this state and a lot of the politicians into the green energy. And I think it's going to be detrimental to the state and the future of the state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
Man, Randy, right on my, I hope I can do that. If I run over my 15 minutes, guys, and you want to adjourn, you just adjourn, and I'll go off the record if anybody wants to listen. I got 3.5 hours in here because I've done it, and so I'll do what I can do here in 15.
Give us the highlights.
I'll give you the highlights, and if you want some details, you know, you just give me the green light. I'm going to start with the construction cost of a 1 megawatt of generating capacity of wind energy. And we're going to look at the construction cost, and we're going to look at the operation cost, and then we're going to move over to the other side of the board, and we're going to take a look at the production, the value of the electrical production. And I'll let you think about that for a few seconds, and then we're going to go my third item, how does this all work? Tax credits and grants and subsidies and things like that. So to start with, in this bag, I've got an article that I copied out of the Sioux City Journal back in 2018 featuring MidAmerican Energy in Iowa, which is a subsidiary of Berkshire, Warren Buffett's company. And at that time, they had 4,991 megawatts of wind generating capacity for a cost of over $12 billion. So I got the calculator out. That is $2.4 million per megawatt. That's over $2.4 million per megawatt. So I'm going to write that over here. $2.4 million per megawatt. So I was talking to my accountant one day, and I said, I'm going to try to make a cash flow out of this. And let's say I got a combine worth $2.4 million. And I'm going to set it up on a depreciation schedule, and I'm going to go 10%. 10% depreciation. I'm going to go 5% for repairs. I'm going to go 5% for maintenance, labor, that sort of thing. I'm going to go 1% for taxes, property tax. I'm going to go 1% for insurance. And I'm going to pay the farmer. I'm going to rent his land, and I'm going to pay rent to him I'm going to pay that farmer $10,000 per megawatt rent. I got leases, I got road agreements, and I got lawsuits, I got an attorney, I got legal fees. $5,000 per megawatt. Now that's just a ballpark number. That's 20 hours at $250 an hour for attorney. It's no doubt way low. Let's go here. Depreciation, 10% of that, $240,000. 5%, that's $120,000. 5%, another $120,000. Now, what are we going to do? Oh, 1%, that's $24,000. They promised to pay property taxes on these things. Well, in Wayne County, I pay about 1% property taxes, rule of thumb, on the land value. If I got an $8,000 farm, it's going to be about $80 an acre to the courthouse. That's where I come up with that. These are ballpark, right out of the air. However, I talked to my accountant about it, and he said, I asked him, are these within the guidelines and parameters of acceptability for an IRS audit? He said, you're conservative in every one of them. You're not going to have a bit of problem. Okay, back to this tax thing. The Randolph Project got started, and they had a grand opening, and they were talking about all the taxes they were paying. And they had a ballpark, they had a number. And they had the megawatts out there too. So I got my calculator out and I found out they're paying 1/6 of 1%. Not 1%. I used the number that I pay, what they should be paying. One more thing on the property taxes, you guys. These are not attached to real property. They're attached to chattel property. And the state supposedly collects it and then reimburses the county. And the state gets a pretty good commission for that, but because they are attached to chattel property, who is going to come down to the courthouse and write a check and buy those taxes? These taxes are uncollectible. How do you collect them if they decide to leave? 1%, another $24,000. So I got my tax, I got my insurance at $24,000. Okay. Somebody's going to have to pay for some backup power when the wind don't blow. That's a cost, big cost. How am I going to figure that? Well, I'm an irrigator. If I want to run on peak, I got to pay $88.50 a horsepower. And a megawatt can run at 100% efficiency. A megawatt can run 1,360 horsepower. So I simply took 1,360 times what I pay, and I got a little over $120,000. So I'm going to put that on here, $120,000 backup power cost. It's the same rate as I pay as an irrigator. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm missing one. And I'm leaving a lot of expenses out. I've got interest, depreciation, labor, repairs, maintenance, cost of backup power, rent to landowner, road construction, donations, grid synchronization, AC-DC, AC conversion costs, lobby expense, insurance, property taxes, legal expense, office expense, advertising, memberships, transportation, shipping, handling, bonding, pre-construction studies, meteorological studies, environmental studies, raptor counts, decommissioning, travel, fuel, lodging, meals, contingency, and miscellaneous. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Randy, which one am I missing?
Interest.
Huh?
Interest.
Interest. What'd you say?
Interest.
Interest.
Well, that's one of the costs you set, and that would be the one that I would come to automatically.
Interest.
Yep.
3% interest. $72,000. Okay, that's one. Thank you very much. You know what this adds up to? Anybody got a calculator? It's $735,000. And I even haven't scratched the surface of what I put for expenses. But my accountant says, stop there. you made your point, okay? So here we go. Let's say we can run a 1 megawatt annually for that. Doubt if you can. These things here that you see around Emerson and in the Waterbury area were built in Madrid, Spain. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Built in Madrid, shipped to Houston, hauled all the way up here. Can you imagine what the costs were? Imagine shipping a line of machinery to Europe. Tractors, combines, grain carts, you name it. What would that cost? That Nacelle up there weighs 250,000 pounds. Okay, if you take this number and divide it by hours per year, there's take $735,000 divided by 8,760 hours in a year, you get $84 per hour. Okay, there we go. We're going to stop there. There's our cost per hour. Anybody know what a megawatt is? How big is a megawatt and what's it worth? A megawatt is 1,000 kilowatts. Mega, 1,000. So, we're talking about 1 megawatt of wind energy generating capacity here. This thing operating at 100% efficient, which is physically impossible, 1 megawatt could generate, theoretically, 1,000 kilowatts. Or, operating for an hour, 1,000 kilowatt hours. I got a lot of information from a friend, kind of a, would you call Phil a friend?
Yeah.
Well, Phil, the manager of the Shoals Project, I debated him in a commissioner meeting.
Friendly enemy.
He's a good guy, but stop there. We got done beating each other up, we shook hands, traded business cards, and went on our way. About a week later, he called me up, I'd like to take you and your wife out for supper. He wanted to know what I knew, and I wanted to know what he knew. So this was Cat and Mouse. I said, Phil, me and you are going to be partners. How does this damn thing work? You know, then, okay, so we're trading ideas. I said, so a megawatt. I said, how efficient are your turbines? He said, 40%. Oh, there are no way. Now, from what I've read, they're not 40%, Phil. They're 15 to 20. John Hay from Lincoln Extension has a website, and I got a copy. He's done his figures at 15%. I said, okay, Phil, they're 40%. We ain't got time to fuss. So, 1 megawatt capable of generating 1,000 kilowatt hours in an hour can generate 400 kilowatt hours per hour operating at an hour. Okay? If it's running. I said, what's the stuff worth? He said, we got a long-term contract with Omaha Public Power for 1.5 cents a kilowatt hour. So, take that times 1.5 cents. Quick. 400 times 1.5 cents. How much?
600.
600 what?
Dollars?
Yeah, $6.
$6. It's 600 pennies. That's my trick. It's $6. 600 pennies. 400 times 1.5 pennies is $6. See? And I haven't scratched the surface on the expenses yet.
How much does it cost to run my house for an hour? I mean, how many kilowatts did it take to run my house? Or
well,
just an average home.
It's, you know, let me think here.
Well, what would it take to run this building?
Oh, God, I don't know. But, you know, see, here's the deal. This is wholesale. These guys are not distributors, they're producers. Your public power is your distributor, and they got the poles and the transformers and, you know, and the power lines, and it's costly, and the maintenance. So these guys are just producers. So wholesale price is about all they can hope for. You know, what's your electric bill run around about $100 a month? So 10 cents a kilowatt, that'd be 1,000 kilowatt hours a month. That'd be about right? 1,000 kilowatt hours? But now, see, instead of raising the kilowatt price, they're raising the fees. Mm-hmm. Hookup fee or some kind of a line fee, and so your price per kilowatt is really going up, only they're not calling it that. They're just calling it fees. So you can talk to your electrician, tell him you got a 1 megawatt generator operating at 40%, and I can sell my power for 1.5 cents. How much an hour am I going to make? And here's what you'll get. So what in the world's going on? Okay, so I come into town. I'm a really high income guy. I'm looking for a partner. And I'm looking for a partner that's also a really high income guy, probably in the 50% tax bracket. And I'm looking for a guy that has a bank, probably president of the commissioners.
Maybe looking at the wrong guy here.
Maybe he's on the zoning board too. And I find that guy and I say, "Hey, Marty, I got to talk to you a little bit. We got just listen, sit still." Okay, so me and Marty decide we're going to build a $500 million wind farm. Now we're going to be patient. So we go out. First, we form an LLC, okay? Then we go out and start getting some leases signed from farmers, and we tell them all this, and if we decide to put a turbo, we're going to give you all this money every year, you know, and by golly, we get some leases. So we apply for a 30% Treasury grant, okay? And we get it. That is $150 million.
That's from the federal government?
Yep. So that brings our wind farm cost down to $350 million. Well, that kind of gets us off the ground. So we continue on. We get a few more leases. And then we start digging a few holes, and we pour a little cement in the bottom. Now we call the IRS lady, and she comes out, takes some pictures, and says, "You are eligible for a certificate of initiation. So now you are eligible for either a 30% investment tax credit, or if you choose, you can get a 2.3 cent production tax credit on every kilowatt hour of electricity you produce." So, 30%, we already know what that is. So we take our 30% investment tax credit, which is another $150 million.
That they're going to forgive on that.
Investment tax credit. That is a piece of paper that you get from the government that says that if you owe $150 million worth of taxes, you can take this piece of paper, because it's a credit, and pay those taxes instead of writing a check. Okay? So, we decide we're going to take the investment tax credit. Okay, so now we're down to $200 million. Okay. Now, keep in mind, me and Marty are in a really high tax bracket. And we got the option to take depreciation on this thing, accelerated depreciation. So since this is a grant, we could depreciate this number here, $350 million. So we take the $350 million, use that to reduce our net income, and it saves us half of this on our tax bill, which is $175 million. So we take that off our deal here. And now, since Marty has a bank, we decided we're going to borrow $25 million to get us through this thing. Okay. Remember that $6 an hour? We don't care about that. We don't care. Now, okay, remember that LLC? Way back out somewhere, like in, where's Enel located?
Italy.
They're in Italy. I don't know for sure the town. Enel is a big corporation in Italy. And me and you are reps out of there, see? And so the first thing, we create an LLC. And then we create a holding company. The LLC creates a holding company. So these tax credits and any kind of asset comes into us, you know, our $6 an hour, and that quick gets shifted over to the holding company. So we got corporation, we got an LLC, which means limited cash, you know, limited liability, very little cash. And now we got a holding company. We're so insulated that if somebody out there had a problem with $20,000, okay, and not only that, we're registered in, where's that place out east? They registered, is it New Hampshire?
That's right.
Oh, it's out east somewhere. Everybody gets there. Okay, so we got to hire Delaware. It's a Delaware company. You've heard of them. Delaware, real popular place to license these things. So you're gonna sue that wind farm. Well, first you got to go find an attorney licensed to that. And then you got to get into the LLC. Well, we don't have anything. It's over in the holding company. So you see, there's not much hope there. But okay, so in this holding company now, maybe talking out of two sides of my mouth here. I had me and Marty here taking advantage of all these tax credits and the depreciation. But the fact is, not very many people are like that. So we monetize, that's a word Phil used, and I said, you mean launder? We launder these tax credits and this depreciation into cash by selling shares in the holding company to investors that are in really high income brackets. So it's just like if you made a whole bunch of money one year and I didn't make much of anything and I had a 15% tax bracket I didn't even touch, I could sell that tax bracket to you, make a little money, and you could use it. Of course, mm-hmm. That's not legal, but tax equity financing does make it legal. Have you ever heard of tax equity financing? I bet you've all heard of tax increment financing, right?
Oh, yeah.
But not tax equity. This is kind of quiet, but I got a little detail there for you. So if you invest in this holding company and you're in a high enough tax bracket and you sit on that investment for 5 years and one day, you will make approximately your whole investment back plus about 88% on your money, about 16% a year. And at that point, after 5 years, your equity flips back to the original developer. You know, you don't have any equity anymore. It's gone. But you don't really care. You made so much money in the first 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it's set up for 5 years is because the statute of limitation runs out over 5 years on depreciation on these renewable energy. So you don't have to recapture the depreciation after 5 years. So we run this thing for 5 years and then we sell it. And we price it at half price, $250 million, and we get an offer of $225. We take it. So we sold it 5 years and one day later, and we got $225 million for this thing, half price, a little less. We take this $25 million here and pay off the bank. We got $200 million left. Me and Marty shake hands, split it down the middle. We'll see you next time. Not bad, huh?
Bad? I'm down.
Not bad. Now, these are hypotheticals, but from what I have read, this is the principle of what's going on. So, okay. Anybody want any of this or you got it?
Got
okay.
It.
Okay. Now, So we're going to wash the board off, and pretty soon, you know, we made a pretty good lick there, but you know what? Maybe we could have done a little better. What do you think? If me and you run together at the bar some night and we get to talking and writing numbers on a napkin, you got your calculator out and you say, hey, Doug, you dumb shit, why'd you talk me into that 30%? Remember that 30% investment tax credit we took, $150 million? We had a choice of 30% or 2.3 cents per kilowatt hour. Well, remember what the market was on that stuff? 1.5 cents. Do you know what 2.3 divided by 1.5 is? 153%. Marty says, why don't we take the 30? Let's do this again. Now we got a whole bunch of options going on here. Let's say, for instance, it's hot and it's dry. Big high-pressure dome like Randy was talking about. Like 2012, really hot. The pivots are running, the fans are running, the air conditioners are running, livestock's. I mean, people, it's hot. People buy a window air conditioner and put that in the bedroom, plug that in the wall too, because the central air can't keep up. And the coal plants are going, the gas plants are going, everything's going, and the power lines are just shaking, you know. We're right next to a meltdown. But out west, there's a cold front coming. 3 o'clock in the morning, it rains. It cools off, the windows come open, pivot shut off, demand drops like this. Next morning, northwest wind comes in behind the front, windmills are all turning. The windmill guy calls up the manager at the power company and says, say, I hear you're a little short of power over there, we can help you out this morning. And the guy's been up all night watching his gauges and his meters and getting ready for a rolling blackout or whatever he's got to do to keep this thing from blowing up. He said, hey, you should have called me yesterday. He hangs up the phone just. He's kind of crabby today. Okay. Well, the next day, wind's blowing harder yet. Windmill guy says, hey, don't hang up. I got to talk. He said, we got all this power that we don't know what to do with. If we don't get it through our meter, we don't get our 2.3 cents. We got to get that out there. He said, I'll give you a penny and a half a kilowatt just to take this. And the manager says, well, what am I supposed to do with it? Our demand's down to the baseload today. Well, I don't care what you do with it. Just take it. Get rid of it. And so he looks at his chart. They got that big chart on the wall. Substation, three phase here, disconnect there, another one over here and there and here and here. And he says, well, you know what? We got this substation over here. And you know, we can throw this switch and close this one, bring your power right in the back side of this thing or in the front side and take it out the back, take it down and ground it. We'll take all you got. We don't need this sub today. We'll isolate it. It's called negative pricing. They can now afford with this to pay somebody to take their power if the grid doesn't need it.
And just put it back in the earth.
Just ground it, get rid of it, and still make money.
How long ago did Wayne decide to go with that project that you're talking about over there?
Boy, they've been in the works for 6 or 8 years when they first started signing leases.
Yeah, I think they were... Somebody went back through the minutes of the county commissioners, and back like in 2010, there were power wind turbine company executives at commissioner meetings talking to them.
Were you guys, did you get an opportunity to talk to them before they decided to go, or you weren't?
No, I did not know anything about it at the time, but I now have You can print this off Nebraska Deeds Online, and you can get all the legal descriptions that are subject to wind lease, because that lease is attached to the deed and is part of the legal title of the farm. That farm is encumbered now with a wind lease. And, looking at this paper, they were signed in 2016, and look at this back paper, they were signed in 2010, so Randy was right on the money.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the legal description, you can see the names of the guys that own the land, but if you go buy that farm, you're buying that farm subject to that lease. And I got a copy of one of them. If anybody wants to analyze it, I can go through it. But those leases, the one I got, I believe, is 40 or 45 years, renewable at the option of lessee, not lessor. He's stuck with it. Lessee can get out of it on certain anniversaries.
Mm-hmm.
But it's renewable up to that many years. And it is a lease for the whole legal description. So unless you have it definitively specified in your lease where those turbines are going to be, they could put a turbine, a power line, a road, wherever they want.
On your property.
On your property. And then you go out and complain, and they say, go home and read your lease. And I wouldn't sign one of them, but these guys are cutting up their farms in four or five pieces for maybe $20,000, and at that $6 an hour, you know what that is? You know, remember the interest was $72,000 over here. $6 an hour is $52,000 at $6 an hour. You probably couldn't hire a technician for $52,000. See, the argument that I run into when I put this up, and they say, well, the cost of construction costs and cost of operation is going down fast. It doesn't matter if they grow like weeds, if they're trees or free, you know. This is what the revenue is. You couldn't even maintain them if they did produce themselves like weeds.
What's a large one? How many megawatts are they do?
How many, Randy?
I'm not sure.
Well, I think they're about 2.5 over here, mm-hmm. and they're getting bigger all the time. See, a megawatt's not necessarily one turbine.
Mm-hmm.
You see, but this next deal that they're building, is that the Haystack one over by Windside now? They're supposed to be.
Haystack is the Enel one. It'll be finished next year.
Okay.
Lincoln Clean Energy is the Windside project.
Okay, so. The deal, the strange deal, well, I don't know if you call it strange, but it's the way they work, but this Emerson project was initiated by Tradewind, what, 6-8 years ago they started signing leases? Maybe, something like that. Okay, Tradewind was based out of Kansas, and you did some research, and you say that's an Enel company?
It is now.
It is now, but they were originally out of Kansas. Well, okay, Tradewind started the project, that I know for sure, over here by Emerson and Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And they got the leases signed, and it seems like that's their method of operation, because they started that one over by Carroll, too, and then they sold that to Enel. They sold it to, what, Haystack?
Well, the third end of the project is Enel, just like the Dixon.
Okay. Okay. Enel is a big Italian corporation. So, Rattlesnake is Enel. You see, when Rattlesnake bought out Tradewind, you know, those guys were driving Enel pickups. They had Enel logos on them. So, Tradewind started the project, but then over the years they decided they were going to put in bigger, taller turbines. And Tradewind wanted to sell their project to Rattlesnake. And Rattlesnake was going to make it work by putting in taller turbines. However, the NDB, which is a navigational beacon at Wayne, was restricting them, according to FAA, FAA regulations in the proximity that they could build by the airport. See, they wanted to build closer to the Wayne Airport. Now, the NDB is an old World War II vintage navigational beacon that still worked. There's not many of them around anymore because when they break down, they don't fix them. They just junk them.
Mm-hmm.
One time at the airport authority meeting, Tradewind said that we would like you to consider taking out your NDB beacon because we'd like to build these turbines closer to the airport, and you know, it's kind of, you know, obsolete, and they offered him $500,000 to take that thing out. And I know one of the guys on the board, he said we tabled it. So okay, we'll have to think about it, we'll call you. So after the meeting, one of the guys said, well, why don't we ask for $1 million? Another guy said, well, let's ask for $1.5 million. Why don't you just down to $1 million? So all in favor, they voted for that. They invited the Tradewind guy back and said, we'll take it out for $1 million bucks. Or and they said, done. And they made a down payment of $300,000, and here it is right here. They made a down payment to the Wayne Airport Authority of $300,000. Said, the rest, the $1.2 million will come when we get in operation. We'll get our project up. And it did. And you see what's going on at the Wayne Airport? They're building runways and taxiways, and they bought a simulator, you know, and, you know, they got a handful of guys in the flying club now, and just a handsome, but... But the people in Wayne, they, you know, the people inside, you know, they kind of like these wind turbine deals, see? And you can buy this power. You know, you've heard about Facebook, you know, buying the power off of this project. Well, it was brought up in a hearing in Lincoln that I was to when I testified, and then there was a windmill guy that testified, and he got challenged by a couple of those senators, one in particular. And after he heard what I said, and after he heard what this other guy said, he said, so this looks like this is an advertising and accounting gimmick that you guys say that Facebook is buying this, because there is not an extension cord that goes from these windmills down to Facebook. And he finally crumbled and said, yeah, it's an accounting and advertising gimmick. And so what's going on is they're getting a tremendous break in their electricity just to call it renewable. And I got another newspaper article in here somewhere. If I can find it, I'll read it to you. But it talks about a tariff. A tariff. Arrangement between Omaha Public Power, Tradewind, and Facebook. And so a tariff is a price rig situation of some kind. And it's in here. I could read it to you, but that's how this is working. So those guys are in favor because they're getting a really cut rate on their power, because they say it. So another reason why they want to have these turbines out here in Nebraska or Colorado or out here in the Midwest is because California likes to buy the credits off of them. And and so, in some cases, the renewable energy credits are worth more than the electricity. They call it renewable power certificate to California. California needs credits to meet its renewable power quota, so it's willing to pay for what is a piece of paper. The wind farm can also sell the real electric power separately to someone who is willing to buy electricity that comes without the renewable power attribute. So you can generate electricity, sell it to somebody, and you can sell the credits off of your renewable power to California, so they can generate power with gas, coal, or oil, but because they own these credits, they can call that renewable.
And that part of it's legal to
do that. That's legal.
Because I'm more familiar with the energy credits than any of the other stuff we've talked about. But,
okay, it's another article here, a paragraph. Sometimes a certificate may be more valuable than the power. In fact, sometimes the power may literally be worth less than nothing. At certain times, California has too much solar power that it can't use because it would destabilize the grid. When the power is worth less than nothing, the producer will have to pay someone to use the power. Someone has to use the power, or there can't be a certificate. That would be a counterfeit certificate if they did. You can't just throw the power away. That would negate the whole rationale. You might think that any state would be happy to accept free power, but it may be inconvenient for technical or economic reasons, or it just may be that only one party is available that can take the power, and they can exercise monopoly power and make the party trying to get rid of the power pay for the privilege. So let's say me and Marty over on the side, we got a coal plant, and we're boiling water and making steam and turning turbines. But we're baseload guys. We warm that thing up and we just keep it hot. And so we could satisfy the baseload, you know, power demand, lights, fans, stuff that runs every day, the clock on the wall, that sort of thing. Okay. But when the wind is, okay, now every once in a while here in the summer, you know, we get a little peak. Last 2-3 weeks and it drops back down to base load, so to speak. So let's say today the wind is blowing and they're getting out there on the grid with cheaper power, and so the utilities are buying from them, not us. So we're scooping coal, but we can't sell our power because the wind is blowing, plus they're subsidized. And so keep in mind, the price of electricity is the spread between the base load and the peaks. It's a big determinant of the cost or price we pay for electricity, because this is very high price to generate because it only generated for a short period of time and sold for a short period of time, where this base load stuff sold every day becomes very cheap power to buy. So the idea is to keep the peak and the base load as close together as possible. So today the wind is blowing, cutting in on our base load, and now we got that big high pressure system in July and August when the wind normally stops blowing anyway, and those turbines that I was going to build to run my irrigation equipment with are not turning. I'm coming on the grid to get power back. So I'm raising the peak with my demand, lowering it over here in March and April when we have mostly base load. I'm widening the spread between the peak and the base load. I'm putting upward pressure on the cost of electricity because we can't sell our coal. We can't sell our electricity when wind's blowing. And so what we do is we shoot that steam out into the cooling pond, make a whole big bunch of steam until the wind quits blowing. And then we shoot it back through the turbines and they make up the difference. But we're losing money. We got to raise our prices to do that. So, and if we go broke, like that happened in Europe, Germany in particular, a lot of coal plants went broke because they got crazy with this renewable energy stuff. Now they're subsidizing the coal plants, trying to get them back.
So does Wayne County have any data regarding if they've lost valuation from their property valuation and what they've made up in wind energy?
I doubt it.
That data probably wouldn't be available for probably 5 years post when the construction is done.
So they're not done in Wayne County's project?
Okay.
It's just in construction. The first, the In my neighborhood, there's going to be around 300 turbine towers. There were 80 or 78 completed last year by the first company that was in there. This year, the other company's putting in approximately the same amount, 80, 85, and then Enel comes in next year with 150. All three of those border against each other. They're all one project. Once those are all done, then I think, you know, which will be 22, 23, then you'll start to see the effect on the value of homes at that point.
The valuation of the properties will decrease.
Yes.
And there's no indication that this...
And so then gradually over a 10-year period, they'll probably have to readjust the value of those acreage downward. Mm-hmm. The county will.
So Dixon County being open for a couple years now or a year and a half would be a good, a close neighbor to at least help start to get information from.
And where you have a lot of acreages close to the towers is where the problems are. You get in a less sparsely populated area, you don't have the problems.
Much of an effect.
Is the farm acreage going down too? Is that what you're talking about? You're talking acreages?
The homes.
Residential.
Where people live.
Yeah.
Residential.
They're the people that the noise and the different problems, the flicker effect, mm-hmm. that affect the value, it lowers your quality of life. So, you know, it lowers the value of the home.
But is the value of the farm going down?
The farm ground itself.
No, it's just the home. Mm-hmm. And some people think the value of the farmland will go up because you get more income off the property. Well, you know, we don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember, the income that they're using to pay the rent to the farmer here is not coming from the production. Mm-hmm. It's coming from all these tax credits. So if and when those credits disappear, I think these wind things are junk. Now, the counties are asking for bonding information in case they have to decommission them. But back in 2008, AIG was one of the biggest insurance companies in this country, and they went belly up and they got bailed out by the TARP bill.
Yeah.
Are we going to keep bailing things out? If those bonding companies go broke, if these guys run out of tax credits, mm-hmm. or the price of electricity will have to go up about 14 times, because 14 times 6 is $84 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And
is there any storage by the wind?
Storage?
Yeah.
There's batteries, but they're tremendously expensive.
The city of South Sioux is
bought
one. It's about the size of a semi trailer.
Yeah.
They got a little
they're
solar farm here.
Tremendously expensive.
Yeah.
So
they haven't really.
Got that.
20 years.
Yeah, I wouldn't even want to guess. You know, I don't think good technology is out there to tell you how long that battery.
For Dakota City, you probably it's lithium ion. But this time that's what they have developed. You'd probably just for Dakota City, you'd probably have to have batteries maybe a mile by half a mile and 10 stories tall. That many batteries. But they're working on a new battery.
Yeah, they're
smaller, just holding more electricity. Yeah. But that technology is not here yet.
Yeah,
it's not efficient to charge a battery. You have heat loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's not efficient to discharge a battery. You have heat loss. And batteries store DC power. Windmills generate AC power, but in order to synchronize it to the grid, they convert it to DC, and then invert it back to AC.
At the substations or at where do they do that inversion at?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think it's right upstairs in those things. Mm-hmm. I think. You remember when we had that debate at the newspaper office and that guy from the tech school was there that's teaching this stuff? That's what he told us. And it's very, very expensive and high maintenance. But if you look at AC power on an oscilloscope, it's a nice, smooth sine wave like this. And we operate on 60 hertz here. In other words, we got 60 of these per second, 60 nice waves per second. That's why when you touch it, it about shakes your teeth out, because it's 60 hits per second. This, and in particular three-phase, and that's what we got going here, you got three phases 120 degrees apart, superimposed on each other to make a three-phase motor, make the magnetism work nice and smooth.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine three of these superimposed on each other. There's no room for error here at all. This wavelength, this wave angle, and the frequency has got to be perfect, or you're going to have blackouts. It'll break breakers and it'll trip breakers. So you got all these turbines, and this one's going like this, and this one's going like this, and you got all the manufacturing spec differences in these generators. And in Europe, they're 50 hertz, not 60. I don't know if that's a problem, if they're getting them built to generate 60 hertz, or if they're still coming over here at 50. But what they do is they take the sine wave power and convert it to DC power, which is a nice, smooth, straight line. And then they invert that to what they call a modified sine wave, and I got papers on that too. So with cathodes, anodes, diodes, and that type equipment, they can take this DC power and break it. It's kind of like making a digital picture. You stand back far enough, looks like a picture, but you get really close, you see all these little dots. Well, a modified sine wave, which is DC inverted to AC, looks kind of like this. Okay? So you're taking the DC, and you're shooting it this way, and then you go positive, and then you go neutral, and then you go negative, and like that. But if you stand back far enough, look at this, and look at this, you know, and kind of use your imagination here, you know, it's kind of a rough scale drawing, but you kind of see a sine wave in there, but you're cutting these corners off to do it, and it'll work. But not very good. It's sub-standard power. It'll run lights fine, but it doesn't run electric motors very well. Because the motor runs with a high-frequency vibration, because it don't know which way to turn when you're cutting these corners. Mm-hmm. And bearings go out, and they run hotter. It takes 10 to 15% more of this type power to run a motor than does this one.
Yeah.
So you're saying those towers have gotten bigger, but they're not even more efficient. Is that kind of in a nutshell what's happening
right,
here?
Right. They're losing efficiency going from here to here to here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's calculated into the 40% or not. I doubt it. But you go down to the hardware store, and there's a nice new refrigerator here that said energy efficient, $150 tax credit rebate from the government. So you buy it. Going to save you 10 or 15% on your power bill. So you take it home, plug it in the wall, burn this, takes 10 or 15% more power to run it. But the government paid you $150 to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hardly buy it not that way.
Anyway, anybody got any more questions? I could go on and on and on.
What's the way of expectancy of a turbine?
Well, I don't know. Out at Neely, they've had one or two of them break over, fall over. They get oil leaks in them. They're very expensive, high maintenance things. They're changing blades on them up in northern Iowa. They're changing blades on a bunch of them. You see, that's a kind of a gimmick too. These production tax credits are good for 10 years. And so you run them 10 years, put new blades on them, and you get another 5 years of tax credits. Now they're having a hard time getting rid of the old blades because they're made out of, you know, hazardous glue and stuff, and they cut them up and trying to bury them in different places.
So although green energy kind of has a good, I mean, it sounds all good in theory, but the reality is what's happened is they built these bigger and bigger to be bigger tax.
Yeah, and they're lobbying hard, really hard. Grassley, Ernst, and John Thune, I've sent them all letters, no response from anybody, but I don't know what they're thinking, but...
Green energy is expensive. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
I like the concept of green energy, but I don't like the concept of a scam and a shell game to make to financially. And if it's not financially beneficial for the county, they're concerned.
Well, Randy's on this nuclear fusion thing. I really like the idea of that. Nuclear fission is a splitting of an atom, and you lose the protons and neutrons and electrons go flying out, and that's your radioactivity. But this fusion is putting them together. It doesn't spill those radioactive particles. And the problem they had was creating the magnets that could tolerate the heat. They're using an isotope from from seawater, or is it with deuterium? It's an isotope of...
from ocean water.
It's an isotope of ocean water of some kind there. Isotope of hydrogen, is it?
Hydrogen.
Deuterium. So they're using that, and they're fusing those, and they're creating helium, which is a harmless gas, but it's kind of like what the sun does. And it just releases a tremendous amount of heat. It happens in a magnetic field. And if they can contain that and harvest that, mm-hmm. this thing Randy was talking about is supposed to fit in the trunk of a car. If they ever get that perfected, then mm-hmm. it should be really off. And these things with just all this hydrocarbons and everything would be obsolete if that happens.
I sure appreciate you guys coming over. A lot of good information. And we may call on you again.
That'll be great. Yeah, facts check me all you want. I brought some packets for you.
Okay, thank you.
This is a speech I made to NCORP in North Platte. I can't remember what those initials stand for, but it's three or four NRDs got together, and they're pumping water into the Republican River and sent it down to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
There was a large farm operation called Lincoln County Farms, and a hedge fund company bought that and sold it to these guys, and they're thinking about putting turbines on it to make some money. So now you got a government agency trying to get their own
money
credit, and so I guess I didn't bring enough copies. My wife ran out of ink, but I bet one of these ladies knows where there's a copy machine.
Yeah,
we'll get that.
Or share them or something, and don't throw them away. Pass them on. I have in here that speech I made down there, and I also have a testimony I made in Lincoln in favor of LB 155. And then I have a response that a lady wrote in response to my testimony here, and then I got my response to her. And then I got an article or two on tax equity financing, and that explains the equity flip that I was talking about, where an investor can buy into the holding company. And some of this, you got to read it two or three times and think about it, or have your county attorney read it. And then I got this... the sale of the tax credits article in here, and explains pretty good how that works. And, you know, do your own research. I got one more here. Okay. You know, copy it, spread it around. If I've said anything that you can't document or you prove wrong, you got to let me know. I've been working on this for about 10 years.
All right.
Here's a copy of a lease. If anybody wants me to analyze that, I'd be glad to help. And thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So I take it you and your buddy never went in business at your initial start.
I'll stand.
No, we did.
Yeah.
That
works for me.
Okay.
That was one thing that when you talked about attorney, that farmer family out there by Waterbury told me that they had their relative in Omaha look at his attorney.
Yeah.
He says it's truly written in their favor.
Yes.
You know, and he says about 3/4 inch thick. The papers.
Well, this is from a few years back. Get the people. Here's an article. These guys say it costs $532,000 to decommission a single wind turbine, written on October 3rd, 2019. I don't know who the source of that is or what their logic was, but it's still going to leave that big slab of cement in there, 4 feet under the ground. You know, it's on top of a hill. 20 years, you'd be sweeping that thing. And if the bonding companies go broke and these things never get taken out,
they're going to be there.
They're going to be there. Yeah. Eventually, the citizens of the county will have to deal with it.
The landowner, to me, it would be his problem, actually.
Yeah, and, you know, I've spent my whole career trying to make things more efficient, take this fence out, consolidate this field and that field. And, you know, let me put a tie line here and a tie line here. We get this ditch out, and then this little piece here will fit into that. Efficiency, that's the American way. Lower the cost of production for the benefit of the consumer. And, you know, if any one of you want to go flying with me, we'll fly around. And we'll see farms that they got a road goes around here and wraps around there. And then it goes over here, and they got the most cut up, inefficient agricultural production possibilities that they could ever even design. And ultimately, let's say they want to rent that farm, and I got a 36 row planter. I'm sorry, I'm going to bid on this one over here that's straight and square. Somebody with a 4 row going to have this because I can't afford it. Take me twice as long.
You're going to, you talk about it, the level of efficiency though. You're taking an outfit that makes something for $6 and makes everyone believe it's worth $84.
Yeah.
You know, it is. It's just a, it's a heck of a deal. There's lots of good information out there.
Well, yeah. Document it. Look it up. It's out there.
Yeah.
You got to dig it out. But, you know, call me anytime.
Yeah. We'll probably more than likely be back in contact with you.
Might need a little grease or water.
No, that's fine. We'll get her.
Yeah, maybe that's what this is. Maybe that's a...
Other disinfectant.
Am I not clean enough here?
It's
your hands or are you the door? All right, thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
All right.
Anybody got any commissioner committee reports? I don't think there's much of that going on, so I don't. Any mail or emergency business? No? All right. I would say we'll go ahead and adjourn.
One quick question. Do we need somebody on the Planning and Zoning Committee? I mean, that just reminded me when he was here talking about the planning
board
and zoning.
Board of Adjustment.
Is that what it is?
That's
Board of Adjustment?
Okay. That's what Dennis was saying. Is they were down one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Dennis.
Reinert.
When he called about 200th Street.
Yeah.
He mentioned that, and I know it ties into Planning and Zoning. They do something.
They're looking for a member, yes.
Okay.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
We don't have to appoint them or come up with it? No. Okay.
No. We don't have anything to do with Board of Adjustments.
Okay. Sorry
about that. Nope, you're good.
I had something written down, but I couldn't remember what it was.
All right, if there's nothing else, we'll go ahead and adjourn.
All right.